Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Mraz. The Nuggets take game one. Pete and DA almost come to blows over tanking. It's the best of the DA show now.
Let's start with last night's game number one of the Western Conference Finals. Advantage, Nuggets. Denver jumped out to a 21-point lead. Held on at the end. The Lakers cut it to just three. But at the end of game one, it's the Denver Nuggets taking game number one. It was an impressive performance yet again from Nikola Jokic, who throws down a triple-double. And the question becomes, is this going to be a short series for the Nuggets? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
And here we go. Inbound goes to Jamal, back over to Joker. 4 seconds left for Denver. Jokic has it at the point. You got to shoot it. Does for three. Got it at the horn! Right over Anthony Davis.
But Nikola was great. You know, 34 points, 21 rebounds, 14 assists, two blocks. And as you mentioned, Harrison, his aggression, him driving the ball, dunking the ball in traffic. And we always talk about an aggressive Nikola Jokic is a very effective Nikola Jokic.
3 seconds left to go in Denver. There's the horn. Ball Arena crowd to its feet. The Denver Nuggets take game number one of the Western Conference Finals.
They're 1-0, and we have to come back with desperation going into game two. We have to play better. We have to rebound better. I thought we did a good job of not turning the ball over. That's one thing we've been very conscious about in the postseason. But we've been better in transition tonight. We wasn't that great in the first half. We cleaned it up in the second half. So we need to be better at all facets of the game.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
That was Nuggets Radio on the call. LeBron and Michael Malone, head coach of the Nuggets. So my big takeaways are this. This is not going to be a short series, despite as dominant as the Nuggets looked last night, building up to a 21-point lead. This is not going to be a short series because I believe that the Lakers found something late in this game, in the third quarter into the fourth quarter, they can take away and use moving forward. Now, the pros, the good for the Nuggets. Jokic is a monster. He is just a miserable matchup for anybody. And Jokic is putting his stamp right now in a postseason where you might just say, oh yeah, that's the year Jokic dominated. That's the Jokic year. You know, Moses Malone did this back in 1983 as a big who was good for a really long time, but had to cement his legacy as an all-timer with an incredible postseason run and unguardable, indefensible postseason run. We could be looking at that from Jokic, where really great big man, had won MVPs, but really wasn't in the all-time list until he won a championship and a dominant postseason. This could be that for Jokic. He was tremendous last night yet again. Also, I love the balance from the Nuggets scoring. Look at how they spread out the point scoring last night. Jokic had 34. Jamal Murray had 31. 21 points for Caldwell Pope. 15 for Michael Porter Jr. 12 for Aaron Gordon. Every starter had double-digit scoring. They also got 16 from Brown off the bench. So I liked all of that, and obviously I love the way that the Nuggets absolutely dominated the first half, building a huge lead at the break. What I didn't like from a Nuggets standpoint is Jokic only had 3 points of the fourth quarter. So he seemingly ran out of gas offensively when it came to crunch time. And the Nuggets allowed the big third quarter into the fourth quarter to allow the Lakers to get back in it. And they did not have the killer instinct to say, this is game one in our house. We're up 20 and we're not going to let you off the mat. They let the Lakers breathe and had to survive. Are the Nuggets going to survive? I'm going to sound like a broken record throughout this series and perhaps the NBA Finals as well. I have doubted the Nuggets' ability to win a championship because I have doubted their ability to get defensive stops at critical junctures. And last night was another one of those where I know they pulled out a win, but come on, you're up 21 points at home against an elder statesman Lakers team. You need to keep your foot on the throat and not let them crawl back into it. They got all the way to within three. That can't happen. So once again, the things that I worry about with the Nuggets came to rear their ugly head last night. I will also say, though, advantage Nugs is that Anthony Davis came to play last night. He was incredible. AD had 40 points and 10 rebounds. 40 and 10. But the reason why the Nuggets were still able to win is that AD has to chase Jokic all over the place. Jokic's range is from when he walks into the gym, just in terms of playmaking. I mean, he can take the inbounds pass from underneath his own basket and thread a pass all the way down the floor for an open bucket the other way. His passing and his range, that rainbow three at the end of the third quarter, means that AD has to come away from the paint and make sure he's got at least some connection to Jokic. That opens up the interior. So AD came to play last night. We got to give him that. Oftentimes we criticize and question how often he's engaged. He was engaged last night. He wanted it. And yet the Nuggets were still able to win because Jokic was so good in the first three quarters of this game. Certainly an interesting chess match going into game number two, but no, I don't think this is a short series. I think the Lakers had something last night that they feel good about. 855-212-4CBS on Twitter, DA on CBS. Man, the Spurs have some type of horseshoe crammed right up the you-know-what. Is this one of the luckiest franchises that's ever roamed the face of the earth? The Spurs have won the NBA draft lottery three times. All three times, they landed on a generational talent. 1987, David Robinson. Robinson was so dominant in college, Navy won NCAA tournament games. Navy. Can you even remember the last time Navy was in the tournament? David Robinson made Navy a March Madness team that could win games. Obviously went on to a Hall of Fame career and was one of the best big men of the 80s and 90s. In 1997, much like this year, except everybody knew Tim Duncan because he played college at Wake Forest, they won the NBA draft lottery. Rick Pitino was convinced the Celtics were going to win that lottery. Instead, it came up ping pong ball Spurs, and Tim Duncan just so happened to be perhaps the most polished collegiate basketball star ever, the most well-rounded. And by year two of Tim Duncan, they already started winning NBA championships. And now this year, the Spurs had equal footing odds last night with two other teams, the Rockets and the Pistons, to win the overall number one spot for, again, a generational talent that comes along once in a blue moon. I think Adrian Wojnarowski oversold it a little bit by saying this could be the greatest prospect in the history of professional sports. That feels heavy. that feels hyperbolic. But look, Wembanyama is the type of guy that has all of the boxes checked for today's modern NBA. He runs like a gazelle. He's 7 feet tall. He's got incredible handle. He's got great shooting range. I mean, he does it all. Plus, he's played overseas, so he's played against pros already. He's a teenager, and yet he's gotten good experience, better than you could even get here in the States. So he's got everything, plus smart kid. I mean, you know, just you hear him speak last night, even though Windhorse's mic was out for him. I mean, Windhorse, how do you have the most talked about prospect in the NBA's recent history and his mic's out? You sent Windy all the way to France for this interview and his mic is out.
Needed to send Cap with him.
How could it happen? Windhorse's microphone worked. Wemby's didn't. Windy's did. Wemby's didn't. But three times the Spurs win the lottery, and these are the three players. There's no Anthony Bennett in there. And how about the Pistons getting absolutely screwed royally? The Pistons were tied for the best odds to win the draft lottery because they had the worst record of the NBA. Worst record, worst team, the Pistons. They came up with the fifth pick. Could you imagine having the worst record of the league and by just sheer lottery dumb luck, you pick number five?
That's absolutely atrocious.
That's awful. We'll talk more about Wemby a little bit later on in the show, but man, I mean, the Spurs, what a freaking stroke of luck. I mean, they've been bad for like 10 minutes, and they just got the most talked about prospect. Let's see, they won their last NBA Finals 2014. So it's been, what?
9 years?
9 years. Oh. But they've been playoff teams.
Yeah, boo-hoo.
They've been a playoff team because even after they won that 2016 NBA championship, they still had Kawhi for a couple of years, and that was the end of the Tony Parker thing.
And one of the best coaches for the last 30 years.
Now, for Wembanyama, he clearly is going to a spot where they've been very good with international talent. They were the ones that took a flyer on Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker, and those guys ended up as Hall of Famers. They've gone through many international prospects and scouts, and so this is a great spot for Victor. But yeah, I mean, oof, you look at your watch and you go, well, the Spurs haven't even been that bad for very long, and now suddenly they got a guy that can walk in and immediately become a superstar?
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Incredible.
The biggest win in the NBA last night belonged to the Spurs, the draft lottery gifting them Victor Wembanyama, just like it gave them David Robinson and Tim Duncan. The Pistons will pick fifth, yes, that's true, I believe, after having the worst record, making this the fifth straight time the worst team did not get number one.
How many times?
Five straight years, the team with the worst record hasn't gotten number one.
Well, that means that process might be wrong.
But it does it does help dissuade tanking. If you don't,
yeah,
if you
I
never
guess.
Get the top pick.
I guess.
I don't know. We just saw the Mavs tank for the 10th pick, so I don't know that dissuades tanking completely.
Right.
Well, that's a little different. They tanked one game, and that was because it was a top 10 protected pick. That's a little different that they want to avoid teams trying to lose the entire season.
Well, but I can make an argument with the Mavs that is worse than you being terrible to try and pick the one of the best players possibly ever. Like, it would be okay if the Pistons didn't play games this year. So they went 0-82 to try and get Wembanyama.
You can make a case they should lose their pick for that because that was supposed to end up being the Knicks pick.
No, see, I disagree. I think tanking is okay. I said this when the Eagles tried to lose that game against the Giants. Was that the Giants? No, Washington.
Of course, the Giants played.
I think trying to lose is totally fine.
Oh no, I'm okay with tanking in general too. But if you're going to be offended by tanking, I think what the Mavs did is more offensive than a team trying to be bad for an entire year to get a player like Wembanyama.
Hard for me to say because I'm okay with both versions of it. But one, you are asking your fans to spend money 41 dates, and you're losing every one of them versus one date.
It should be no tanking. You got to be kidding me. There should be no tanking. You're a professional team.
I'll tell you this, Pete. If I told you if the Jets went 1-16 this year, but I could guarantee you a Super Bowl in 2025, you would say, sign me up.
But there's no guarantee.
But if I told you there was.
There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee.
But if I told you there was, you would sign up. And and these teams are banking on those odds.
You can't give up seasons. I just get that.
Okay, well, can you give up a game?
No.
So if the vice versa happened with the Knicks needing to lose to help protect their pick, you would have advocated, if you were a Knicks fan, you better go try to win that game, even if it means nothing.
Yes, you got to try to win that game.
Just for no reason.
You're asking fans to come into your building or buy your merchandise. Well, why are you going to say, oh, yeah, all of a sudden we're going to go lose?
Well, I think the goal is always to win a championship, and whatever gets you to that championship.
But that's not a guarantee. Not a guarantee.
Yeah, but winning that one game isn't a guarantee either.
But your goal is to go out there.
Let me ask you, Pete. Was it better for the Spurs this year?
Wait. Can I ask Pete a direct question?
Sure.
Were you happy when the Jets were 9-10 of the way to Trevor Lawrence and then won two random games and didn't get the number one pick and had Zach Wilson and now have to trade for Aaron Rodgers?
Of course, I would have loved to have Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, so
your professional team is supposed to go out there and play to win.
But the players do, despite what the organization does resting him. The players themselves try. So you're getting the honest.
But
effort.
Then why are we having a problem with tanking? Why are we having a problem with tanking? Why are we having a problem changing how the lottery is for tanking? Why?
Well, because there are organizations that, like the Spurs this year, was it better for the Spurs to try to win 38 games and be a 11 seed for the play-in or a 10 seed for the play-in, or was it better for them to lose 60 and get Victor Wembanyama, who's going to be a stud for 15 years? I mean, it's clearly better for them to have done this.
I think it's a bad message to the fans, and then you shouldn't take any tickets. You shouldn't let any fan come into the building. Because you're basically saying we're going to lose, but buy our stuff anyway. I think that's a disservice business-wise to your fan
base. I'll tell you this. I saw a watch party video last night in San Antonio.
Yeah.
There's about 1,000 people at this bar. And when the lottery pick comes up that they got number one, they explode. They pop champagne. Every fan there is thrilled. I mean, beyond thrilled. They are jumping up and down, screaming, hugging, crying, and they're popping champagne. You're going to tell me that those fans they would have preferred to see a 10 seed in the play-in game?
They would have preferred to be in the playoffs.
Pete, stop it. You think those 1,000 people that popped champagne last night would have rather been beaten by the Pelicans in the play-in game? Stop it.
There was a chance to win the title.
Oh, come on, Pete, stop it.
That's not a dumbest thing ever.
1,000 people last night got a generational talent that could have been LeBron, that could have been Tim Duncan. You're telling me they would have preferred to have lost to the Pelicans in the play-in game?
They would prefer to be in the playoffs. I would prefer to be in the playoffs.
But they're coming off 3 straight years where they tried to actually not tank.
Enjoy your tanking.
Well, they did. They did. You just saw. They did. 1,000 people did.
I don't know. I think it's a horrible way to be.
But you might think
it's a horrible way to be.
But there's 1,000 or multiple thousands of people. I mean,
if end of the season, right? The season's over, and you have a chance to get the pick. fine. You celebrate, of course. Well, that's what anything. But to purposely tank your season in order to get a number one pick, I think it's a little out of line.
But they also, the previous 3 years, they refused to go all in on a rebuild, and they won 32, 33, 34 games, didn't make the playoffs, and still took fan money and still took, you know, revenue. Now they actually have a plan to get better and get out of the doldrums. This is actually, this was a smart, exponentially smarter decision than being mediocre. That was the criticism the last 3 years was, you can't live in the middle like this. If you're not going to great, you have to be terrible so you can get great again. They were trying to not be terrible, realized that wasn't going to work, went terrible, and now they have Wembanyama.
Yeah, they nailed it.
The worst thing you could
they've been bad for 1 year, and they nailed it.
No, they've been bad for four.
Right, but not
now
so
they, but
bad.
But now they got the one really bad year, and here we are.
The worst thing you could be is the Bengals with Andy Dalton year after year. The best thing you could be is the Bengals with Joe Burrow.
Right? Yeah.
Okay, and enjoy. Have fun.
Have fun with your tanking. Have fun with your 7'5" unicorn.
If I'm asking people to come to my building and pay tickets, and I'm tanking, I think that's a disservice to our fan base.
Okay, but then you're defending the NBA by loading up the odds against the worst team. So the Pistons had the worst record. They got the fifth pick. So you're saying the NBA's got it right?
No, I think there should be a balance. There should be a balance on it. Like the Detroit Pistons were horrible. I mean, but they shouldn't have the opportunity to tank every year and end up with the pick one, number one pick every year. There has to be some type of balance.
All right, but this year, the NBA's guardrails against the worst team tanking for the number one pick for a generational talent worked.
Yeah. I think, though, Pete just said something that I could maybe get behind is somehow, like, capping your tanking. Like, you can't have back-to-back number one picks. Like, something to say, okay, you want to do this once, okay, fine. But if it happens again, you can't have a top three pick. Like,
I think that's fair.
I think on the back end, there's a way to stop teams, like, to force teams to be good faster than maybe they want to.
Right.
But otherwise, you should be allowed to take a one-year flyer, especially on a player like this.
Yeah, I mean, the Spurs just set themselves up for a decade of success again.
Right, unless we're all wrong about this guy. They just got...
Even if we are wrong, it would be better than being, let's just even say, the 12th seed, the Wizards.
Right.
It's better. It's better to have this guy, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, I would rather have the number one pick than have watched my team get swept by the Sixers in the first round, like they did.
Like the Nets did.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I would have rather been a Spurs fan last night than a Net fan a month ago.
And would you have rather been a Spurs fan all season, though, with 20 wins?
Well, yeah, and just to quickly debate Pete's point back, just don't buy the tickets for the years that they're bad. Part of the perks of buying season tickets is to have access to playoff tickets. If you know you're going to be bad, then why are you worried about having the access to playoff tickets? That's their financial decisions to eat the loss in ticket revenue. I'll be back when you get the number one overall pick.
And I don't think any of those teams complained about bad attendance. I don't think any of them stomped their feet like, where are you guys? Like, they knew what they were. They said what they were doing. Their fans knew what they were doing. If they didn't come to games, I don't remember anybody complaining about that. They knew what the deal was on both ends.
Yeah.
We agree to disagree. I'm not a fan of giving up long. You have to have a long term plan, but I'm not a fan of giving up short term planning. Of a team, I think you go into every year wanting to win, and when you're saying, hey, we're not going to win this year, I think it's not the way to play the game.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday morning. Check us out on your apps on your phone. Yeah, you can stream us for free. Use the free Odyssey app. If you use the free Odyssey app, you can not only stream CBS Sports Radio for free, but any Odyssey sports radio station across America. Plus, all of our podcasts are inside that app as well. So the best of the show, the full 4 hours. New York accent also available inside the free Odyssey app. This week's guest is Tommy John, who obviously had the surgery that changed sports and certainly changed baseball. Got to speak to him about the historical pioneering medical marvel that was Tommy John. Did you realize that? I didn't realize this. Tommy John pitched for 11 seasons between 63 and 73. Then he was injured. So at that point I said, okay, you had to have ligament replacement surgery basically in your elbow. It had never been done at a baseball player in 1974. Did you think about retiring? You already had a 10-year baseball career, and nobody had ever come back from this. He said no. Now, this is just a tough-ass old codger. He's about 80 years old now. He goes, if I would have had to throw the ball underhanded, I would have. They weren't going to take me off of the the mound. So I said, that's amazing. So he gets the surgery done in 74. He sits out all 75. Comes back at 76. He pitches after Tommy John surgery, after 11 years in baseball already, until 1989. He pitched at 46 years old with a restructured elbow with a different tendon. I mean, it's just, he truly was a medical marvel. So, I mean, talk about a tough ass. This guy had the first Tommy John surgery ever, obviously, and pitched 13 years after it at the age of 33.
That's insane.
Insane.
It always surprises me that Tommy John could have a surgery named Tommy John surgery.
Kind of perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not funny.
Some defense of Petey here about the whole tanking thing we were talking about. Just Some Guy says there's at least 1,000 people that are actually with Pete too. These players are paid to win. The rules are made so the actual worst team gets the best chance. Losing on purpose is cheating. It's worse than what Pete Rose did.
And he's not just some guy to me. Great
job. That's a hot take. Worse than Pete Rose.
I mean, let's relax a little bit.
Sam Hinkie, thrown out of the league. Throw him out.
Your job as an organization is to reward your fans with a championship. If that means thanking, you do that.
Right. And again, as Sean said, they don't lose the game on purpose. They don't have the best roster.
The organization's trying to put out a roster that would lose.
Right, but when the game starts, they try to win. And as Pete said, there are no guarantees. The Spurs won 22 times despite their best efforts this year.
This is totally ridiculous. All of it is ridiculous. Don't have a stupid lottery that's weighted then. You know what? Put all the teams that didn't make the playoffs in the lottery. They all have an equal chance. You get rid of tanking right away.
Not a bad point.
All it's right. Not funny. Bump, 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 bump.
Stupid. It's the whole thing. The whole concept is stupid of tanking. It just, all right, we're going to put out the worst team so we can try to win, but we're not really winning. We want to lose. I mean, come on.
So yesterday, Schwartz tweeted, I even hesitate to talk about this, but it's coming up in soundcheck next hour, so I need to preface what we're going to be talking about because this became kind of a big deal internally yesterday, okay?
Big deal in sports. It made our topic list last night.
So ESPN put out a clip yesterday on Twitter, okay?
I'm not on Twitter or Facebook right now.
Of Adrian Wojnarowski, who is the single most notable basketball reporter on earth. And his quote was that Victor Wembanyama is the, quote, most highly anticipated player to ever enter the NBA, maybe the greatest prospect in the history of team sports. Now, that's overboard. That's overboard because while certainly Wembanyama has been on NBA scouts' radars for 2 to 3 years, the last year, 2 years, drumbeat of who's going to get him has, for basketball circles, for bad team circles, has been there. He does not have the same cachet in this country that LeBron did coming into the league. So that I think that Woj was off there. However, certainly if you're a basketball fan, and certainly if you are just kind of like casually aware of the lottery and what was happening this year, the Wembanyama storyline was a huge one. It was impossible to ignore. Generational talent, teams potentially tanking, as we were just talking about, to try to get him. Schwartz retweets this tweet from ESPN, the quote from Wojnarowski, and says, I had to look up who this guy is. Never heard of him until just now. The Victor guy. I mean, not Woj. Thanks, Schwartz. We want a clarification. That it wasn't Adrian Wojnarowski, never heard of.
Which was also on the table.
Now, I want you as an audience to, what do they say, recuse yourself. I want you to recuse yourself of whether you know who Victor Wembanyama is or not. There is a distinct possibility you had never heard of him until yesterday either. Because if you're a fan of a team that wasn't in the lottery, or you pay attention to college basketball here in the States, it's possible you hadn't heard of Victor Wembanyama. But it's not your job. It's not your job to know these things, to be tapped in, to talk intelligently about these things. And it is Schwartz's job to do an update that, you know, would today certainly be one of the top two stories. Game one of the Western Conference Finals and who won the lottery. That would absolutely be your lead, or you were terribly off on your job. Now, Gelb got on him on Twitter, as did I, but I want to canvass the panel here. Do we appreciate that Schwartz was honest about this? Or it's okay if he didn't know it, just don't say it.
Bingo. He should know it, but it's okay to not know it. The idea that you tweet it in almost like a bragging fashion, like a knock on Woj, that I've never even heard of him, it's just read the room. And it's Schwartz is very guilty of this often. He needs to chime in on anything and everything, and it comes back to haunt them here. Sometimes you could sit a play out.
Sit a play out.
What's up, Kettle?
Well, maybe a lesson that Mraz has learned the hard way.
But no, he's a guy that will always pump out the next Major League Lacrosse game he's doing, and now all of a sudden we're gonna diminish the NBA and their prospects. Sit the play out, and I don't want to hear from you. If you have nothing to say, don't say it, all right? Enough, especially from this guy who always is talking about the things that we care about the least.
Fair take.
Yeah. I've done this tweet oftentimes like around like the Grammys because I'm so out of touch with real music. I'm like, should I know who this person is?
Right, there's a difference.
And then people yell at me. But they just never work. The construction of this tweet never works because you always look bad. And Schwartz looks ridiculous here. He just does because for a guy who lives on Twitter and lives on social media and works here, I don't know how you could have gotten to yesterday without passing knowledge of Victor Wembanyama. That's not the first time Woj just tweeted about him. He's been on the front page of ESPN.com since the weekend, prepping for the draft lottery last night. He's been on NBA TV. He's been on ESPN in the afternoons. It's not possible that Schwartz has missed. And his name is not Joe Johnson. You could have missed. Like, his name even grabs your attention. I don't get it. Schwartz couldn't possibly have looked. There's no saving grace. There's no silver lining. There's no escape hatch. He looked ridiculous with this tweet yesterday.
I agree, you know, and I like Schwartz, and I've defended Schwartz in the past, but this was a case where his ego got the best of him because he proudly doesn't like the NBA. He loves the NHL. He loves his niche sports like lacrosse and long snapping and whatever. So
like that's a sport. Long snapping.
I mean, God forbid somebody last week went, "Who's Connor Bedard?" He would have had a hissy fit.
So he proudly, defiantly, "I don't pay attention to the NBA," what have you. And in this case, as Mraz said, it came back to bite him. Because it's one thing to be like, "I'm not into that sport." It doesn't have to be your favorite sport. But when you say almost like, "I don't even know who this guy is because it's so unimportant," and yet you realize soon after your dopey tweet, it's really important to a lot of people that you should be serving, that's the problem. And if he was just the Islanders beat reporter, it would be fine. Who cares if he knows who Wembanyama is if all he's doing is reporting on UBS Arena comings and goings?
Or just going there for the free popcorn, but okay.
But if you're going to work at this network, you're contractually obliged to take some interest in the biggest story in one of the biggest sports. And it was even like, who was the number one pick in the NHL? I don't know who that is.
This year will be Connor Bedard.
That's the Connor Bedard that you just mentioned, right? So had we gotten to the NHL lottery, and I didn't know this, I didn't know it, honestly, but I certainly wouldn't have tweeted it like, why would I even care about this? I mean, like, you know, you have to also read the room of what you're supposed to know and when you're supposed to know it.
Right. And even like looking at a mock draft last night, once the order was set up, you get to pick six or seven, and there are names that played in college basketball that I'm unfamiliar with. The one name you needed to know about this draft is Victor Wembanyama, and Schwartz went, huh?
Well, forget, huh? It wasn't like it was a pop quiz and he didn't know. It was proudly declaring, I don't even know who this guy is.
Right. If he quote tweets.
This guy can't be that important.
That what was a the bum. Thing. If he quote tweets Woj and goes, I think Woj needs to calm down here. I bet you there's plenty of sports fans who've never even heard of the guy yet. Like, that's like a different kind of tweet. To pump your chest, I'd be like, I he's the bear of all sports. I had to look up
right.
who he is.
He's the barometer. If he knows it, then it's good. If he doesn't know it, then
you're Major League Lacrosse. New York Lizards of Major League Lacrosse. New York Lizards of Major League Lacrosse.
Never heard of this guy.
He played a Daniel Murphy minor league home run call on WFAN.
I was trying to forget about that.
And he's scolding Woj for Wembanyama gloating.
Should be noted, we have a Twitch viewer named Brian Loves Chloe who asks, who the hell is Schwartz?
Oh.
So we're getting new viewers every day.
Well, is that a... Who the hell is this guy to be talking about this? Or is it, I don't know who this person is.
I interpret it as, unless I'm wrong, because I haven't seen this handle a bunch, who is this person? So okay. It just shows you there is that new kid every day coming into the show. Got to update him.
Do you like Dairy Queen?
There you go.
Do you like gummy bears?
So we've got audio of this coming up in soundcheck next hour because I think Gelb took a blowtorch to Schwartz last night on this.
Kia.
At the moment, though, we have headlines with Andrew Bogish.
D.A., the Joker, played it straight last night, started the Western Conference Finals with 8 points, 12 boards, and 5 assists in the first quarter. Nikola Jokic finishing with 34, 21, and 14, his 6th triple-double of this postseason, the 12th of his career. His Nuggets held off the Lakers, 132-126. But did L.A. find its Batman in the second half? Rui Hachimura guarded Jokic, letting Anthony Davis protect the rim, and it seemed to work for Darvin Ham.
Have A is that big, long arm just ready to contest over the top of Rui. And so it was good for us in some segments. And, you know, we were able to, after a tough first half, giving up 72 points, claw our way back into it.
The Lakers were down 21 in the third, but got as close as 3 with 3 minutes left. Game 2's in Denver tomorrow night, while the Celtics and Heat begin their East finale tonight in Boston. Ja Morant issued a statement last night shortly after Adam Silver told ESPN that he was shocked to see another video of Morant playing with another gun. Morant apologized to those he let down, acknowledging that words mean little right now, but he is still working to improve himself. And as we've been just discussing, Victor Wembanyama is headed to San Antonio. The Spurs won last night's draft lottery, so they can pick the best prospect since LeBron next month. The Hornets and Blazers complete the top 3. Then the Rockets and Pistons, those two on the Spurs, had equal odds for number 1 entering last night. Justin Verlander made his Mets home debut last night against the Rays.
And the 1-2 delivery is lifted way up into the air down the left field line to the corner. Gone if it's fair to the pole. And fair ball. Home run for Isak Paredes. He's got a second of the night, and the Rays now lead 6-0.
That's from Rays Radio. Isak Paredes taking Verlander deep twice. Verlander booed after allowing 6 runs on 8 hits over 5.
I understand the fans are frustrated. We're frustrated, too. Everybody's frustrated. We expect to be better. I expect to be better. I think this entire organization expects to be better.
The Rays not getting booed. They won last night 8-5. I believe they have 320 wins here on May 17th.
Best team ever.
Nolan Arenado homered for a 5th consecutive game, but his Cardinals lost to the Brewers 3-2. The Phillies on a 3-game skid after a 4-3 loss in San Francisco. The Rangers down the Braves 7-4, and the Tigers blanked the Pirates 4-0. Remember that good start for Pittsburgh? They now have dropped 12 of 14. Ooh. They've scored just 22 runs in those 14 Ooh. Games. And Las Vegas Aces head coach Becky Hammond gets a 2-game suspension for inappropriate remarks made to former player De'Erica Hamby about Hamby's pregnancy. The team docked its 2025 first-round pick for offering Hamby impermissible benefits during contract talks. The Players Association says the penalties are insufficient, partly because they hurt a future player who now cannot be picked in that 2025 first round. And now we're getting stunned,
Woo!
Huh?
It
doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
This was a popular submission, so thanks to all those that sent it over. Tell me you're drunk driving without telling me you're drunk driving. A man in the small town of Springfield, Colorado, was pulled over recently on suspicion of speeding. As the officer approached the car, he could see the driver moving around in the front seat, and then the man got out through the passenger door.
Huh.
He showed signs of being drunk immediately, ran from the cop when asked how many drinks he had had, and probably because he was drunk, the cop caught him within 20 yards.
Right.
To escape this DUI charge, the man had switched spots with his dog, putting the pooch in the driver's seat as if that would have been okay.
And that was his story, that the dog was driving?
Blame
Take
Fido.
Him away. Yeah. Take him away. He's got no license.
Trying to tell him.
I said...
The dog likes tanking, too. It's a stupid dog.
That's right. Right in jail.
I told Bowser, your license has expired. Your paws don't reach the gas pedal.
And you got to try to win every game.
He wouldn't listen to me, officer.
Your fans are pissed.
He was not listening to me.
I said that lack of thumbs was going to be a problem on the blinkers. By the way, I think Bogish might be in a lazy stunt to a news group. As soon as I get to the bottom of the story, it says, more to read. Barren tree holds Michigan City in suspense for hours on Mother's Day. And Chonkosaurus, plump Chicago snapping turtle, captured on video.
That's been all this week.
That's, what are you, just on the same web clicking what's the next
The Associated Press oddities page where I get 95% of these things.
Big animal week.
It was a big animal week. So... obviously, drinking and driving is not funny, not something to joke about. But in this case, thankfully, nobody is hurt. He gets 20 yards. He runs 20 yards, and the cop catches him. I mean, that's brutal. That's really...
I mean, if you're that inebriated, you probably can't run that quick. Are you trying to say...
I need the dashboard cam on this, or I need the body cam.
Or the cop's a former corner, great closing speed.
And how many zigzags did it take him to go the 20 yards, you know? It might have been really like 70 total yards.
And in a circle.
Right.
Or backwards.
Right. It's like when they geo-track Michael Vick running around the field. And they're like, it was a 13-yard game, but he ran like 67 yards to get there. I would love to see, man, the body cam on this just would have been amazing. Like, you see a guy pull over on the side of the road, crawl into the passenger seat, push his dog into the driver's seat, fall out of the passenger seat, and then run 20 yards stumbling and drunk before he's tackled by the cop. And then say, it was the dog who was driving.
Oh, it's horrible.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Remember, you can always listen to the show in podcast form. The full 4 hours are the best of the show. Available, just search The DA Show on your favorite podcast platform. Subscribe, rate, and review. We begin with a Ja'Marr Chase, Bengals wide receiver, on Joe Burrow at minicamp.
Yeah, like UFC punches, fly kicks, and punches. You don't watch UFC?
I do, but
what is it? Yeah, he does this. This is normal. He does it to everybody. You don't see this in the locker room? He knee kicks on me sometimes. Like, he do it all the time.
Joe Burrow is walking around the practice facility practicing UFC MMA moves on Ja'Marr Chase and his teammates. Let's hope that it's not at full speed or full strength. I don't want to see Joe Burrow take down some type of grappling hold, throat punch Ja'Marr Chase.
That would get annoying. I don't care that he's the quarterback. I'm getting chopped in the back of the knee again. All right, Joe, we get it. I would get annoyed after a while.
Yeah, the guy that's a little too physical with you?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's like a pat on the butt guy all the time. You know? All right, we get it. Enough. Rub your shoulders guy.
But you were a little uncomfortable with anybody around your butt because you're not proud of your butt.
Well, hold on. I wouldn't say I'm not proud of my butt.
Hold on.
I would say I'm alarmed at my butt or frustrated that the rest of my body doesn't look like my butt. Because conventional wisdom says I should have a big fat ass, and I really don't. Because the rest of me is chunky. That is where I've lost the most weight.
I think my butt getting big.
Right, and so because you're disappointed in your skinny, flat butt,
inverted,
you probably don't want people pinching it or slapping it.
I don't mind that. I would just... Yeah, I think I don't mind people patting my butt. No, I'm okay with it. You want to give me a little spank on the hiney? I'm probably fine with it.
Okay, so you would want Joe Burrow then to do that.
Right, but I wouldn't want him to do it every day. You know, every once in a while, a good little good luck tap, I think, is nice. Every day? Enough.
Hockey's a real stick tap type of sport. You tap a guy on his stick with your stick.
Yeah.
You tap a guy on the shoulder. You tap a guy in the gloves. Tap a guy in the head. Hey, nice job.
Yeah.
You were obviously an elite deck hockey player.
Were you a
stick tapper guy?
Yeah. I mean, usually on the shin guards. I'd go for two taps. Boom, boom. You know, that kind of deal. That would be like the good luck and warm-ups along the line. I was big on tapping the shin guards for sure.
And when you play deck hockey, do you play it just with your sneakers?
Yeah, picture everything that exists with hockey, except it's nonstop running, so it's a lot more difficult because you're just doing wind sprints the whole time.
It's more difficult than being on ice.
Yeah, because you could glide, you could take kind of, you know, half shifts off. There's no shifts off. It is boom, 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 running, sprinting. Obviously, yeah, I was a physical freak at that point.
Physical freak.
Well, for me, yeah. I mean, that was a lot of, I mean, every other day was a lot of running. Round, firm, rumpus.
Whose game was yours most similar to?
At the time, Matthew Barnaby.
Okay.
I was a scoring touch, but agitator, stick up for, you know, some of the big stars on the team. So I played to my strengths. You know, I was looked at as kind of a bigger guy, so a little bit of an enforcer, but I had the magic touch with my stick.
And who were the bigger stars on the team?
At the time, our big centerman was Kevin Chamberlain. He actually lost his life last year, but he was great. Really elite. Matt Leo had a little bit of a Sidney Crosby in him. He was excellent as well. And, you know, you go down the line, there were some other good players. A couple of buddies, I'm still friends with the Rollins brothers. They were twins. One's better than the other, but you can't tell the other that's not as good. But those were the kind of guys you looked out for. If they got roughed up in the corner, you had to come over big elbow into the boards.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, agitator. That makes sense.
And what was the... Yeah, that's right. Perfect description for Mraz. And what was the team name?
I played for three teams. The Red Wings, the Blackhawks, and the Penguins.
Wow.
They were labeled after NHL franchises. I hopped around a little bit. You know, I wore out my welcome a couple places.
A journeyman, if you
will. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Here is Mets voice Gary Cohen on SNY as Justin Verlander makes his Citi Field debut last night and kind of implodes against the Rays, giving up a pair of home runs, a bunch of hits, and the Mets end up losing yet again. And here was Cohen on maybe nerves for Verlander.
Can you have butterflies when you're 40 years old? New experience for Justin Verlander, going to the mound at Citi Field for the first time as a New York Met.
So I'm not sure this is what Mraz hopes it is, which is him excuse-making for Verlander. I'm not sure.
Excuse-making? No. This is more a commentary on the Mets' play-by-play voice here. Has nothing to do with Verlander himself.
Okay, so you think it's just...
This was before Verlander gave up runs.
This is when he takes the mound.
The play-by-play voice there says, is it possible to have butterflies at the age of 40 years old? There are maybe 8,000 to 10,000 people in attendance. The team stinks. There's no nerves to be except for. And a guy who has won Cy Young's, won a World Series, pitched in multiple World Series... Why, if you're the play-by-play voice of, no offense, a franchise doesn't want anything in 30 years, do you think that pitcher taking them out for the first time at 40 to make his home debut there, would you think there's butterflies? That is...
Well, he did pitch well his first two starts on the road, and this is his first home start and did not pitch well. So is it possible that Cohen was right, that there were some butterflies of pitching for the first time at home?
Are you kidding me? DA, even you can't defend this.
No. Well, I'll say this. I don't know if he had butterflies. If he did, that's a joke. He should not have had butterflies.
Right. And again, that audio you heard is before Cohen would even know that Verlander would implode last night. The man took the field to a smattering of applause because nobody's at the game. How could you say with a straight face, is it possible to have butterflies, as if this is some kind of monumental moment for Justin Verlander's career?
Well, maybe it's not monumental, but maybe he knows he's making a ton of money. The Mets are desperate for any type of good starting pitching right now. He's finally pitching at home for the first time. There's been frustration with him getting injured right off the jump, and maybe Cohen spoke to Verlander before the game, and that Verlander admitted, like, hey, this is not just a normal start for me because there's a lot on the line because of my, you know, he feels the pressure.
Started multiple World Series games, had to build up the courage to ask Kate Upton out. And you think in front of a bunch of Pete the Bodies last night, standing online for hamburgers, that he had butterflies? I mean, that's an embarrassing moment from a really good play-by-play voice.
You know what this is? This is deflection. This is the morning after Judge and Herman. Let me take a shot at the Mets grasping at straws here. Again, we didn't get to him yesterday with the Judge take, but he yelled at me and taunted my kid.
No.
And now he's making fun of Gary Cohen and the Mets broadcast.
A big signature and
soundcheck.
Nobody
was there.
Stop.
How could you be nervous?
A big signature on soundcheck has been both the praise a la a Bob Uecker, the laughing at a la a John Sterling, of play-by-play voices for the past few years. You cannot set up a moment like that in May. It's disrespectful to Justin Verlander to even utter the words, do you think it's possible that butterflies? We're not talking about going to pitch at Wrigley for the first time either. It's Citi Field. It's a glorified restaurant with a baseball diamond.
Another shot at the Mets.
There it is.
Yeah, wow, that's low.
Totally takes away his argument.
That's a better ballpark than Yankee Stadium.
It's fine. It's a nice place. But the point is, you don't get butterflies.
Verlander should not have had butterflies last night.
It's a joke. It's a joke for a play-by-play announcer to suggest that. The fact that you guys aren't slamming the table, this is an embarrassing moment in broadcasting history from a broadcaster sitting over there is tough. And it's a guy we like and respect. You got to be better than that.
It's not that terrible. It's a comment I wouldn't have made, but it's not that terrible.
I think it's just worse that Verlander might have felt pressure last night. That's a problem. In front of 10,000 people.
And that's the thing. Now you today can have that take. Wow, maybe he did feel butterflies. That's not fair to Justin Verlander to suggest he had butterflies. And that's why he stunk, because he's 40. The Rays are awesome and the Mets stink. That's why he stunk, not because of butterflies.
Finally, yesterday, Schwartz had a regrettable tweet admitting that he had no idea who Victor Wembanyama is. Here was Zach Gelb last night.
Pete's response, it was even more embarrassing than the first part of the tweet. He's like, can you tell me who Gavin Adler is without looking it up? I have no clue who that is. So I looked it up, and he was the number one overall pick in the lacrosse draft this year. Pete, I know you love lacrosse because they give you a bunch of free tickets and all that stuff. We're doing a national radio show. You're a national update anchor for sports radio. You're not giving updates on the cross until, what, the men's final four here and there. Every single show, tonight, tomorrow, once we find out who the number one overall pick is going to be talking about Victor Wembanyama. So that's just absolutely ridiculous. And you know what? I just saw this during the break because I saw DA was crushing him. I was crushing Peter Schwartz. Peter Schwartz actually deleted the tweet. But it's like, that's got to be something that you don't admit out loud. And I thought it was a bad look for the network, if I'm being honest.
Gelb was right in all of that. If you're Schwartz and you don't know Victor Wembanyama, and you were employed by CBS Sports Radio to be an update anchor and a personality on a network that is talking about the NBA quite a bit, and today we'll be talking about the lottery and who won the sweepstakes, and if you don't know it, that's fine. You got to keep that to yourself. This is information you do not need to share, and you certainly don't need to be proud of it. And I tweeted at Pete last night. I said, yeah, just don't admit this. Like, this guy's really important to a lot of our listeners. He's important in San Antonio. He's important in Detroit. He's important in Houston. He's important in Portland. These are all our markets, Pete. Do not say to a bunch of our audience, I don't even know who this guy is. It does not help our credibility. It does not help our credibility to employ people who are proudly defiant in the face of the things that we need to know. So you don't know who he is. That's fine. You're a hockey fan. You're a lacrosse fan. That's fine. Don't admit it. And then he deleted the tweet. So now this ends up bringing up a whole different conversation. Did Pete do the right thing deleting the tweet?
In most cases, I would say you can't delete the tweet. I still think he's a coward, but I think he had to delete the tweet. I think when it became apparent that he was way off and this could be career costing for him.
I don't know if it's career costing.
Well, or should I say...
credibility costing.
Yeah, I would say his career is on toast, but it's fair to question whether that tweet could financially cost Pete shifts at a part-time rate here. Maybe you think twice about putting Pete on during NBA playoff games and stuff like that to read scores if he doesn't know. It could cost him in some way, shape, or form financially. I think he had to delete it.
So you think, say this delicately, bosses who don't know what we say on the radio would be aware of what Schwartz said on Twitter and then not put him on an update shift?
Yeah, I mean, if it becomes a big deal where, remember now, multiple hosts on said network had now questioned him on Twitter, Zach Gelb, NDA, I think that's the moment where Schwartz cowers there. I think he cowers once DA is tweeted at him and goes, this is now a big deal. Multiple hosts have tweeted at me, and it is going to affect me in a negative way. I need to take this down.
No, the adult move would have been to, I guess, quote tweet his quote tweet and say, this is on me. I should have known who this guy is. You can't delete tweets.
That's fair. I like Pete. I like Schwartz. But this is a case where being in your own Schwartz world killed him. And he lives in Schwartz world, which is why we always get updates about the kids and the foul balls and the Long Island Ducks highlights.
The umpiring.
The umpiring, the IHOP gift certificates. This is why we get all that. Because Schwartz, unlike, or more so than almost anybody else I know, lives in his own world so much and is empowered by his Twitter followers. These zany, crazy Islanders fans that follow him for the Islanders stuff live in his world. And so, you know, all of these guys that follow him and that live in Levitt Town or live in Uniondale. Or
some of our guys, like Dr. Phil Keto tweeting at him last night that he had never heard of him either.
Is he a Long Islander?
No, Phil Keto is just one of our guys.
No, so what I'm saying is his Twitter followers who are also Islanders fans make him think what he thinks is important is the only thing that's important.
True.
Because they kind of, they do the same thing. And what Pete doesn't get is he's got to wear two hats. It's fine if you know all about the Islanders. It's great that you love the Long Island Lizards. There are Lizards fans that go to Pete as the only media guy that knows anything about them. It's fine. It's great that there's like, probably long snapper aficionados that follow Pete. That's fine. You just have to also realize you also wear a hat of an audience that cares a lot about this guy.
Yeah.
And when Gelb says, or when Gelb calls him out and Schwartz counters with, well, do you know who the number one pick in the lacrosse draft is? Because I do. It's not apples to apples. It is not. Because Zach Gelb or I or any of us in this room or anybody on the network will never, ever, 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 ever talk about the Lizards beating the Brigade in the National Lacrosse League Championship
game.
It's
a good spot there.
There's no way we're doing like a Nighthawks segment. But there is absolutely a guarantee that Pete will do a Wembanyama score or highlight in an update at some point in his career. It is guaranteed that if he was working today, he would have to lead with Wembanyama or game one in every update for the entire shift. So it is not apples to apples. And that's where, again, Schwartz is in Schwartz fishbowl and can't get out of it.
I hate to make this like super serious and cause like a trickle down effect, but Peter Schwartz has been in the respect. I mean, there was a time I was in school, I heard Peter Schwartz doing updates in Radio New York. and I'm great that I've grown to be his friend, but you know, if you're that next wave looking up to a guy like Peter Schwartz who feels like he's been around the business for a long time, this empowers you not to know Arch Manning's name, not to know Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's name. If he doesn't know who Victor Wembanyama is, then how could we ask those 25-something-year-olds learning the ropes and trying to come up behind Pete to have that same kind of respect for their work if, oh, it's no big deal, Schwartz doesn't even know who he is, so I'm going to get through this. There is a little bit of an example being set there that that kind of sloppy work is okay.
Yeah. He brings up a good point, something that's been weighing on my mind heavily actually recently, Dan. I didn't want to discuss it on the air, but you're often very complimentary of me and my job here.
Very much so.
But when my colleagues are what Sean just laid out, like, am I just the least bad of a motley crew? Like, this is the problem now. Like, I don't know how significant those statements are anymore because what's the competition?
Well, I think you're elite at what you do and would be on any network, no matter who you were compared to.
Jack might be better, but that's it.
But I do...
It's got potential. High ceiling.
I do think that this is indicative of a network getting sloppy. I think this is a dynasty that's eroding. I think this is the Cowboys losing to the Panthers in 96. I think this is the Patriots losing to the Titans in the wild card round. We can't have guys on the air that pronounce Arch Manning, one of the biggest prospects ever, as Ark. We got to know Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Gilgeous.
Kai Horton is okay.
Gilgeous. Kristaps Porzingis.
And we got to know Victor Wembanyama. And if we don't read him in updates, nor do we admit it on Twitter. Just don't say anything. You know, just don't say it.
Hide the negatives, accentuate the positives.
This is the best advice. It's like, what do they say about if you don't know what's going on in class, there's no dumb questions. Just stay quiet. That's not how it works in our business.
Go to the
bathroom. If you don't know, stay quiet.
Or we're still in the entertainment business. If you make a mistake or don't know something, you have to own it in a funny way. Not, oh, I'm going to delete this quick because, or, well, they pronounce it ARC in half the countries here or whatever. You know?
Or they edited my audio.
Right, exactly.
That's part of the business.
Can I make excuses? Honestly, let's be honest.
That's part of the business.
This all changed the moment people stopped saying I was a locker room leader. You guys, oh, he's no locker room leader. The moment I stopped being a locker room leader, guess what happened?
Here we go.
We got sloppy around here. So
when did you stop being a locker room leader?
When everybody stopped saying I was a leader.
When
you guys
start?
Went out there. How many times did you guys go out there? You guys consider Mraz a leader? I don't consider him my leader. It's funny. Everybody stopped considering me a leader. The place went downhill.
I'll tell you this right now. Mraz, if you could clean up the newsroom with tape cutting for highlights and for our update anchors knowing what they're talking about, I would go to bat for you to go get a raise and give you a new title. I want you to be a locker
another
leader.
Another title?
Falling up? I mean, what are you doing?
Well, if he does more work,
that's
we need
full.
That.
He's not going to do more work.
It's climbing up.
Are you kidding
won't,
me?
But it's nice to know the incentives there.
He's not doing more work.
What would you say to Pete today if he was in the newsroom?
If
you were Pete, a locker room leader.
Pete, listen, think before you tweet. The most basic thing, think before you tweet. Do yourself a favor. Who has more credibility, you or Adrian Wojnarowski? Did Adrian Wojnarowski call him one of the best prospects or the best prospect come out? Maybe look him up before you tweet that you never heard of him because it's embarrassing for us as a network to keep putting you on the air and you keep putting out the CBS Sports Radio logo on Twitter every time you do an update and you're basically trying to compare him to Galvin Lutz or whoever the heck the lacrosse player was that he said.
That's a good message. That is a good message.
Leader.
That is a locker room leader's message.
Yeah.
Captain C doesn't come with a hard hat, you know?
I'd send them home.
You'd send them home.
That's Pete's answer for everything. Go home. That's Pete's answer.
And then you'd complain about having to fill that shift at the last minute.
I would not. Look, I would if I'm doing that part of the schedule. I don't do the anchor part of it. But if I'm doing that, I'm looking at it like, hey, is this for everything? You know, like you have to question it. You do.
Well, Mraz is right. I mean, you'd start questioning whether you want him around NBA playoff time because then you'd just be like, wow, if you don't know that, then what else don't you know about the league?
Yeah, exactly. And if I was everybody that worked alongside him in that same role, I'd say to myself, boy, the sloppier he gets, the worse it looks for, like, my job. And, like, if we don't need Schwartz reading that, then it looks bad for me keeping a job, you know?
Yeah. I know. It was a bad thing all around last night.
Look to Bogus. He's the leader there in that room.
Him and Jack.
Could be like captain of last year's Blackhawks team, but it's still.
Jack actually looks to me for leadership, and look where we are now.
Give you a honk and a wave.
That's actually a good point.
Pete, send me home.
Well, to be fair, suddenly Jack looks a lot better after Schwartz's night last night.
You know what? I'm filling in next week.
Boach, I'm Jack Stern.
I'm actually off on Friday, but I think Caserta's already in, unfortunately.
Dude, the week got
Caserta and Boyle are loving this.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
Okay, today's poll question is, if you worked in sports media last night, should you have heard of Victor Wembanyama before yesterday? As you might imagine, most of you said, yes, because this happened yesterday when our very own Peter Schwartz admitted on Twitter that before Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted about it, he had never heard of Wembanyama, one of the biggest, most impactful prospects we've seen in years. 90% of you said Pete should have known. 90. And I think that's one of our largest spreads ever with our poll questions of the day. To recap, Schwartz once went to the vet after cutting himself on a fence before the company holiday party. Also, this past year at his Super Bowl party, Schwartz reheated barbecue food and reserved it to his family. And the tweet before Schwartz's controversial comment talked about Aaron Rodgers' jersey sales. Meanwhile, Schwartz has openly admitted to possibly buying an Elijah Moore jersey and changing the name on it to Rodgers.
Jeez.
That is your advanced analytics. Is this true? He has said that he would buy an Elijah Moore jersey and change it rather than just buying an Aaron Rodgers jersey.
I actually think he might have done it already.
He didn't say rather than. That was implied, but he did tweet at the time when he celebrated, oh, now I can find an Elijah Moore jersey discounted and change the name to Rodgers.
He might have done it, to be honest. I got to go. There might be a picture out there, too.
And how do you do this?
Well, I know there is a local place on Long Island not far from me or Schwartz that will like physically remove the stitching even from a replica jersey of that nameplate, take it off, and they will put a new nameplate on, but it will not be an exact match. It'll be so obviously.
And will that cost less than just buying a new jersey?
It'll probably cost you about $20.
Oh. Okay.
So a new jersey is $100, something like that. So it is cost efficient, but it will not be like they got the perfect Rodgers nameplate from the Jets to put on there. It's going to look like a kid's jersey for baseball is put on a Jet jersey.
That's just horrible.
Let's go back to something that Mraz used as some life advice for Schwartz. He said if he was in the newsroom today and Mraz was bestowed the title of locker room leader, he would say, Schwartz, think before you tweet. And I think that's another example here. Schwartz, do you really want people knowing that you would prefer to change an Elijah Moore jersey instead of just buy a new Aaron Rodgers jersey? Do you think that that would be something you'd want people to know that you'd prefer doing?
Not, apparently not. But then again, if he got called out on it, he'd backpedal like he did last week with me and Bogues.
Last week, he also backpedaled?
Well, he backpedaled on. He came on the air and talked about how he's owed free tickets by Boomer and Joe Douglas and then went on and on and on about his kid getting screwed in a charity game, and it really came back to bite him. He is on icy terms with a lot of people around here right now.
He's backing up. He's playing defense.
The palpable electricity Schwartz once had upon returning from the Shep incident has become, we may not see him walk the halls for a while.
What did we decide on the epic fail this morning?
I think perhaps the moment of the week to date, you and Pete arguing loudly about tanking.
I agree with tanking. Pete hates it. Here it is, your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Was it better for the Spurs to try to win 38 games and be a 11 seed for the play-in or a 10 seed for the play-in, or was it better for them to lose 60 and get Victor Wembanyama, who's going to be a stud for 15 years? But I mean, it's clearly better for them to have done this.
I think it's a bad message to the fans, and then you shouldn't take any tickets.
Pretty sick.
You shouldn't let any fan come into the building. Because you're basically saying we're going to lose, but buy our stuff anyway.
You did everything. You did your heart. You did everything right.
I think that's a disservice business-wise to your fan
base.
I'll
tell you this. I saw a watch party video last night in San Antonio.
Yeah.
There's about 1,000 people at this bar. And when the lottery pick comes up that they got number one, they explode. They pop champagne. You're going to tell me that those fans they would have preferred to see a 10 seed in the play-in game?
They would have preferred to be in the playoffs.
Stop.
But I will say
Pete,
this. I will say
Pete,
this.
Stop it.
We got no hope. No hope ever.
You think those 1,000 people that popped champagne last night would have rather been beaten by the Pelicans in the playing game? Stop it.
They were a chance to win the title.
Oh, come on, Pete. Stop it.
Stop it.
That's the dumbest thing ever.
That's not the dumbest thing ever.
Call the Farallon Volunteer Fire Department. He is on fire.
1,000 people last night got a generational talent that could have been LeBron, that could have been Tim Duncan. You're telling me they would have preferred to have lost to the Pelicans in the playing game?
They would prefer to be in the playoffs.
Stop.
But I will say
Pete,
this. I will say this.
Pete, stop it.
I would prefer to be in the playoffs.
But they're coming off 3 straight years where they tried to actually not tank.
Enjoy your tanking.
Well, they did. They did. You just saw they did. 1,000 people did.
Stop. But I will say
Pete,
this. I will say
Pete,
this.
Stop it.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
That's a good one. That was a good knockdown, drag out. It's all good in the hood around here on the DA show. Did you know that I got my estimate back on my car that the piece from the dump truck in front of me smashed my side mirror? I brought it into the shop and they said, okay, we're going to get it in today. They took it in yesterday and they started on the work and it's going to be like 2 or 3 weeks to get it done. I guess they got the parts in. It's probably not that much labor, but they got to wait for the parts to come in. And I told the rental car guy, I said, yeah, when I was on the phone deciding which collision place to go to, the first place said, you got to get here now to get the estimate done, but we can't get to the car until August. And I said, that seemed insane to me. And he said, yeah, well, collision places do that because if you get the estimate done and you get like a replacement mirror done that's not, it's just temporary, you got to stick with them the entire time. So they know, they pressure you to get in there right away so that then you're locked into them and that now they have you for good. So it was a good lesson. If you ever have to deal with insurance companies and collision places, do your research, call around, don't get the, you have to come in right now. You have to come in right now because that's not true. And they'll pressure you even if they're going to screw you, which they would have done to me.
Wow. Mm. Did you know? That's like the sports and that's how we end.
That's our did you know. That's right. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Bondi Bellotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director.
Tanking sucks.
Thanks to Andrew Bogush on your headlines and Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. We're taping the PGP after the show today, so look for that this afternoon. I'm DA and the mothership disconnects.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.